Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour, NPR's roundtable podcast about what we are watching, reading, and listening to. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. This week, well, we will not be spending a segment on Independence Day resurgence, and we'll talk a little about why and a little about the state of the sequel. We'll take a little summer quiz that will test everybody's mettle, and as always, we'll close the show with what's making us happy this week. So stick around.
Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour. Check out the NPR One app for your phone for an exclusive preview of the next episode of Invisibilia. Find brand new episodes of Invisibilia, stories from your local station, and more great podcasts on the NPR One app. It's in your app store now.
It's a week of continuations and contemplation on this week's show, but before we get started here in historic Studio 44, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
And in our fourth chair, it's one of our favorites with us once again, Gene Demby. What do you do at NPR?
I am a correspondent for NPR's Code Switch.
And one of the hosts of the Code Switch podcast.
That's right, I should have said that, yeah.
Note, as we sit in this room, Stephen Thompson is wearing a Code Switch t-shirt because that is how much we love Gene and love their project and love their podcast. So here's the story of this week's show. Our original plan for this week's show was that we were going to do our A topic about Independence Day resurgence. Now, there are a lot of big blockbuster movies every summer, and every summer we have conversations about how many of them do we want to cover. We have skipped some. You wouldn't believe me, but it's true. We have skipped some. You know, but we figured Independence Day, big movie of its time, you know, similar perhaps to Jurassic World. We thought maybe there are some reasons to pay attention to this one. So let's see Independence Day resurgence. Fast forward to me going to see Independence Day resurgence at the Recliner Theater, which you will recall almost always makes me warmly inclined toward whatever movie it is. You'll recall that's how I became oddly fond of The Boy Next Door, starring Jennifer Lopez. Anyway, I am sitting in the theater watching Independence Day resurgence, and I am thinking two things. First of all, this is going to make a very boring A topic because A, it is terrible, and B, I have nothing to say about it. Mm-hmm. Two, I've done now one A and B.
One A and one B, and now we're on two.
And two, I would really appreciate if I were the last one to see a movie like this, and someone on the team could make it so I didn't have to see it, I would really appreciate that and be grateful for that.
You are essentially the hero pilot.
That's right. I flew myself.
Flew the ship into the gaping maw of the alien ship, blowing it up, and saving the rest of us.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because as I watched it, I thought, I don't think there's anything to say about this. We have spoken about big destructive movies all the time. Mm-hmm. The essential thrust of Independence Day resurgence is aliens come. There is massive destruction. There's a very good review by Matt Singer over at Screen Crush that says essentially everything I would have to say. There's massive destruction that means nothing and has no consequences. And then you get this dumb back half plot where it's like every other thing you've ever seen. I had nothing to say. It was just going to be us sitting around talking about bombastic, boring summer blockbusters. And so I called an audible.
Right. You did. Yes, you did.
I texted everybody and I said, let's not do it.
Yes. And actually, I saw that you called an audible on Twitter, and I had to look up what that meant.
And I said on Twitter, I called an audible, we're not doing it. And so we figured the best alternative we could come up with was to just talk about this problem, because this summer, if you have been following box office news, has been a real mix. There are so many sequels out, and sometimes we have enjoyed them. You can refer to last week's show, where we talked about Finding Dory, which although I don't think any of us necessarily thought it was as good as Finding Nemo, it's a perfectly workable summer Pixar movie. You look like you have thoughts, Glenn.
Yeah, well, if we make a list, two lists, of the successful sequels of 2016 and the disappointing sequels, and I'm talking not just in terms of raw box office, but the sort of cultural conversation around them, there are three in the win column, three successful sequels: Finding Dory, Captain America Civil War, The Conjuring 2.
Mm, sure.
And that's it.
Curious.
Everything else. X-Men Apocalypse. Well, wasn't that bad. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows. Independence Day Resurgence. Batman v Superman. Alice Through the Looking Glass. The Huntsman Winter's War.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was an essential.
That was a thing.
Neighbors 2, London Has Fallen, Allegiant, Zoolander 2, My Big Fat Greek Life. And
by the way, I think Neighbors 2, London Has Fallen would be a good movie.
Linda, you can sum up 2016 with 4 words and a numeral. I'm going to do it for you right now. Mm-hmm. Now you see me too. Boom. No one was clamoring, yep. And yet they're foisted upon us. Now, theoretically, this sounds like we're old men yelling at clouds, right? This is the classic, there's too many sequels, there's not enough fresh ideas.
Please eliminate 3.
That said, there are too many sequels.
Yeah.
There should be more fresh ideas.
Yeah. Are you sequels guy, Gene?
No, it's funny that when you're rattling off that list, how many of the first movies were terrible. Like, I didn't realize that there was, like, any...
clamoring as Glenn
says.
Yeah,
I mean, Independence Day, I mean, came out in, 1996? So it was like 20 years ago.
I mean, it was a big, like, exciting movie to people. It was a gigantic hit.
Sure.
It's one of the movies that made Will Smith a star.
Right, it made
certainly.
Him so
not that he's like, in this one.
But, I mean, who is the audience for a sequel like this? Everyone is aged out of this, it seems like. I mean...
Look at Jurassic World. Yeah. I mean, Jurassic World was obviously there were Jurassic Park movies in between Jurassic Park and Jurassic World. But at the same time, like, who was the audience for Jurassic World?
Sure.
You know, I mean, Jurassic Park came out in, 92? And obviously...
Yeah, these are very similar kinds of structured sequels.
When we did our summer movie preview, we talked about, like, boy, you and I, Linda, both agreed, like, this had the potential to be the big blockbuster of the summer on the same principle that Jurassic World was the biggest blockbuster of last summer. That there is a nostalgia sweet spot... that's, you know, for people who were maybe 13 when Independence Day came out and are now 33.
Is the reason those movies, the sequels sort of don't work? You mentioned Independence Day, you mentioned Jurassic Park, the originals.
Right.
So much of what made those movies work when they worked was that they were doing something, at least visually, like that had not been done before. Like everyone was like dumbing out about the fact that these gigantic dinosaurs
and
Roland Emmerich and the giant city-sized saucers, those were very novel at the time. And now we've seen those things done, or things like those things, done a million times.
And I want to put out there the theory that Independence Day... is reaping what it sows. that the original Independence Day, when you saw the trailer for Independence Day, people were like, holy crap, because you see like the White House blowing up. Mm-hmm. The wholesale destruction of mass quantities of buildings was not necessarily, it's not that you'd never seen buildings get destroyed. There have been disaster movies for
Godzilla
decades
movie.
Before that, and Godzilla movies for decades before that, you know. But I think that the shock and awe of seeing like major landmarks get obliterated from space is something that has naturally, the fatigue over that has really become very ingrained, I think.
But on a ledger, Independence Day Resurgence and Jurassic World are identical, right?
Yeah, lot of ways they are.
They are perfectly identical. So on whose feet do we lay the success of Jurassic World? Is it Chris Pratt? Is it, that's pretty much everything. Is it dinosaurs? People like dinosaurs more than aliens?
It's fascinating to me because what I was thinking was we can get very, as you said, there's too many sequels. But I have, as several of you know, I have an almost bottomless ability to appreciate Fast and the Furious movies, which it is not as if they are massively more inspired. So why is it that when they put out the next Fast and the Furious movie, I will happily go see it, I will probably enjoy it, and I will probably leave totally satisfied? I think the reason is there's not even the pretense that those movies are really story-driven, despite the fact that people will tell you, yes, about this group and they're a family, and that's true, and that is a kind of a nice aspect. Believe it or not, they have done some nice work in that area at times. But for the most part, those movies are a wireframe on which to hang car stunts.
Yeah.
The car stunts don't just get bigger. They get more clever because Glenn and I were talking about what's the difference between that and a movie like Independence Day Resurgence, which exists for the purpose of these disaster effects. The problem is the disaster effects, and this carries through to conversations we've had about superhero movies turning into building smashy smashy, as Steven always says, is that those effects just get bigger. They don't necessarily get more interesting. When you go to a Fast and Furious movie, it's not just the effect is bigger, more cars blow up, more stuff, more buildings. They come up with a different visual that you will actually legitimately not have seen. As we were talking about yesterday, there's one in the, I think it's the most recent movie, where all the cars come down on parachutes and there's people in them and then they like honk to the ground and just vroom. And it's funny. It's weird and funny. They have the thing that, you know, it's not that it had never been done before, but the one where they jumped a car through a building into another, like in, through a skyscraper into another skyscraper. Those are fun effects. And maybe it's that. Maybe it's that there's no longer really anywhere to go with effects that are just trying to grow in scope and scale, which I think is what these disaster movies are like.
Well, you've said before, Linda, like, where do you go from the apocalypse?
Right.
Like, what? Like, it's a super apocalypse.
You know? This one is basically just, we thought we averted the apocalypse, but we didn't. Like, so we got to do it again.
And the ships are bigger now, right?
And the ships are bigger.
Yeah.
So, as Gene said, we've seen this kind of destruction. We've seen this scenario play out over and over again. But our relationship to home viewing is different than it was even 4 years ago, even 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Streaming, everything available online all the time, means that if you have an itch, you can get it scratched at home. Mm-hmm. So the fact that we are...
Boy, that's true.
Okay, you kids. I'm going to pull this podcast around. So I was taking down the list of sequels to come still in this year. And this will expose my complete hypocrisy very quickly, as happened. So Bridget Jones' Baby, who cares? Bad Santa 2, do we need that? John Wick 2. Oh, I kind of want to see John Wick 2. That'd be fun, John Wick 2. Ice Age Collision Course. Star Trek Beyond. I'm going to go see Star Trek Beyond. Wait a minute, I'm going to go see Star Trek Beyond. Jason Bourne. Hey, I like the Jason Bourne films. So I think the difference there is I think of John Wick, Star Trek, and Jason Bourne as franchises. Mm-hmm. So I don't resent sequels. Right. I expect sequels. Yeah. But Bad Santa 2, I like Bad Santa. I don't need to see Bad Santa Assignment Miami Beach.
I don't need it for the Bad Santa trilogy.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and that's one point that I wanted to bring up is the notion of serialization and sort of making movies as if you are making TV shows and just treating them, like you said, like franchises where it's just understood that there are going to be more movies like it. And I think one of the things that you get sometimes with these films is like, what are some of the big hit movies of 2016 that are not sequels? And you think of, like, Zootopia.
Right.
Like, I will go see Tootopia, as it will inevitably be typographied.
Right. Zootopia?
Zootopia. Yeah, because I but don't you see the Z turning into a 2?
No, I like
Zootopia.
I
mean, obviously you have Zoolander 2. That didn't work. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. I will go see that because I liked Zootopia 1. Yeah.
Swiss Army Man 2, multi-tool. Swiss Army Man 2 comes with a little magnifying glass.
Gene, would you go see, let's say, Red Tails 2?
Well, I mean, time has come.
If Red Tails had made its money back, there would almost certainly be a Red Tails. So it would be like, I don't know how you would do that in terms of history. There would be more World War II, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the problems is when you make them out of real history. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Those movies were panned, right? I mean, I remember tweeting once like, hey guys, I'm going to watch Olympus Has Fallen. And everyone on Twitter was
garbage.
Like, do not do it.
It's
do
garbage.
Not do it. I got 10 minutes into it. I was like, this is a terrible idea.
If anything, watch White House Down.
Yes, and that's what everyone said. And I could not figure out what the difference was. One of them is Jamie Foxx and Channing Tatum.
Yeah.
And the other one is
Gerard Butler. The other one is the one with Gerard Butler that we made Ari Shapiro's.
Oh, man.
Just steer away from Gerard Butler. That should be
really good rule of thumb. I'm curious as to how you demarcate between what is a franchise and what is
a movie with sequels.
Just a cynical cash
grab. I think certainly there's also a Jack Reacher sequel coming out.
Sure.
Jack Reacher, that's just based on a series of books.
Sure.
That says franchise to me, built in. Jason Bourne, same thing. Star Trek, same thing, because, I mean, it's based
on... James Bond, obviously.
Sure. Yeah. James Bond, obviously. John Wick, I wouldn't have thought, but that film is so structured to kind of build this incredible universe. When I say incredible universe, I mean it's a pretty cheesy universe, but it's a knowing cheesy universe, and I want to go back there.
But here's another thing that I was thinking about too, is my John Wick, in Glenn's example, is Ghostbusters, right? Because technically speaking, Ghostbusters is a sequel.
Is it?
I mean, I think it is in a shared universe where that has previously happened and those guys existed. That's my understanding based on the marketing that I've seen. So you could say, oh, well, why are you going to go to Ghostbusters? And we're going to talk about Ghostbusters.
Yes.
Why are we going to do that? to me, Ghostbusters is interesting to me because it's of a piece with The Heat and Spy, yes, and the comedies that star those same women that have been directed by Paul Feig, those and Bridesmaids. Not really because I care about hearing more about Ghostbusters. You could have called this movie, and you know, maybe this goes to part of some of the angst about it that some people who love the original one have felt. It is, to me, a vehicle to make a comedy with these women, you know, directed by Paul Feig, as I said. And I would be just as interested in it if it were, you know, four women who were college friends get together at someone's house and it turns out to be haunted. Like, it wouldn't actually have to be right. Ghostbusters. Yeah. I would watch it just as much. And so I'm interested in it because its sequelness has so little to do with its appeal. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think Independence Day Resurgence, like, what on earth else would be drawing you to this movie?
Well, and some of the ingredients that we've been talking about why these movies exist. Like, when you talked about Fast and the Furious, you kept using the word fun. Independence Day, it doesn't seem like it was fun.
No.
And it doesn't seem like it necessarily, how much nostalgia for the original movie did it court? It seemed to have some visual cues of the first movie.
It's got Jeff Goldblum doing the Jeff Goldblum thing. Mm-hmm. It's got Judd Hirsch doing kind of the Judd Hirsch thing from the first movie up to a point, although his story is very weird. Anyway.
Weirder than Jeff Goldblum being a cable guy who saves the world.
The thing is, like, now he's kind of been, like, promoted. Like, now, now he's like a genius,
yeah,
right?
It works at the Apple Store.
But some of these movies are being sequelized where you're like, that got sequelized?
Right.
Because they made, like, massive sums of money overseas.
That's my understanding now, about, like, Now You See Me.
Are they making a Pacific Rim 2, right?
I am not sure what the status is.
Because remember, Pacific Rim here was a dud. It did not make its money back here, but it made like $400 million in China.
Right.
I'm assuming there's going to be a Warcraft 2, even though it was not a hit here, because it made hundreds of millions of dollars overseas.
Yeah.
So does that mean that 2016, maybe that's a buffer against what I'm about to say, but does that mean that 2016 is the year that Hollywood realizes that they have been eating their own tail for too long?
Well, this
they
is,
are
yes.
not generating enough new content to support sequels, endless
right.
sequels. So we are just now going to go down a ever diminishing concentric circles until we fly up our own butts.
Right, because speaking of flying up our own butts. So, I was looking back at box office data from 10 years ago and 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And 20 years ago, if you looked at the top 10 movies for the year, there would be a healthy number of quote unquote original stories, even if they were adapted from books. It would be the first movie.
Yeah.
And then you would have, you know, some sequels that made some money that also happened. But in that top 10, you would see the fodder for future sequels if you wanted, right? But if you look at the movies that we should, quote unquote, be seeing sequels to now, if we weren't in this cycle of, well, let's go back 20 years and find something that maybe the 35-year-olds were teenagers. If you look back, you know, 5 years to where you might find normal sequel stuff, it was all already sequels and franchises. Mm-hmm. And so either, you know, we're still making more of them, or they've kind of run out, like the Harry Potter movies or mm-hmm. the Hunger Games movies, where mm-hmm. it's kind of like you can't go on forever. So as you say, this is a cycle with a natural death spiral built into it, mm-hmm. which is either you got to make just for like Fast and Furious 9, Fast and Furious 12, or
Animalisa 2. The squeakquel.
Or you have to start seeding your world with more original stories. I'm right, Gene?
Well, so I'm thinking about this, the thing you just said about Red Tails, right? And like one of the things about Red Tails is because the canon of things with like people of color is so much smaller that it's always like historical. Like I always make the argument that like, ugh, the reason you see many biopics about famous black folks is because the thing they're pulling from is a much shallower pool of sort of the canon is shallower, right?
Yeah.
And you're not pulling from, you know, there's no like black Star Wars, right? And so you always see like everyone knows who Jackie Robinson is, right? Everyone knows who Martin Luther King is.
Muhammad Ali.
Right, exactly. Those things can get like, it's the same sort of lazy thinking at work there.
So, like, Jackie Robinson is the Star Wars.
He is.
Oh, that's interesting. God,
right.
That's
an
parallel.
He's the.
That's a fascinating idea.
Episode 7.
But it's like, But it makes sense in a way, because you're talking about, like, what are the kind of, like, as you say, like, what's the known, kind mm-hmm. of, like, what's the known canon?
And the canon for Black people is always, like, famous, like, luminaries. We already know.
And then think about how much pressure, then, there is on Black Panther
right.
to seed a new franchise.
Mm-hmm. Seriously.
Like, oh, my God, if that movie's great... Like how much weight it's going to have to bear.
All right. Well, I will be really interested to hear what all of y'all think. And we are thinking about all of this as we plan future shows and think about what we're doing. I'm not afraid to call audibles in the future, but come and find us and tell us what you think. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, we are sticking with sequels for our B segment, which is going to be a little quiz, and it's going to test all these guys. So come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Moon Travel Guides, publisher of Moon Route 66 Road Trip by Green Book scholar and travel writer Candace Taylor. With unique turn-by-turn driving routes and advice on the best sites to visit, including historical details about the significance of the route to African-American travelers during the Jim Crow era, Moon Route 66 Road Trip gives the experiential traveler the tools to plan a more personal and memorable road trip. Visit moon.com/radio to learn more.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. In our first segment, we talked about sequels, specifically in the context of why we were not spending an entire segment on Independence Day resurgence. And in our B segment, we thought we would have, it's my favorite thing. I got a little
quiz. You
can
hear the rustling that tells you.
We got a little quiz. It's a quiz. Now, what's going to happen in this quiz? I'm going to give you, these are all sequel taglines.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh.
I'm going to give you the tagline. And you're going to try to tell me what sequel it's from. This is not multiple choice.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
But this is not multiple choice.
Come on.
But
these always make me look so dumb.
Hang on. It's not multiple choice, but it does come with clues. So if you have trouble, I can give you a hint.
Okay. Now, that's just
you a clue.
Each clue will make me look dumber for not knowing.
And you get 2 points if you get it with no hint.
Got it.
And 1 point if you get it with the hint. Are you ready?
Yep.
All right, here we go. Stephen Thompson.
Oh, man.
There's a new war next door.
There's not a War of the Roses sequel.
Would you like a hint?
I'm going to need one, yeah.
Zac Efron.
Oh, man. See, I never know anything, and I feel the pressure, and that makes me dumber. Pressure makes me dumber. Zac Efron.
Is there stealing? Can we steal?
I think there should be stealing.
Okay. There's no stealing, but you can say if you know the answer.
Neighbors 2?
That is Neighbors 2.
Oh,
all right, okay. Glenn Weldon.
I didn't see it.
Glenn Weldon, Raise Some Shell.
Raise Some Hell. That's a play on Raise Some Hell. give me the hint.
The hint would be just recently out.
I was going to say, I think I actually know this one.
This year. On a list you've already read.
I know, and I can't turn back to the list.
Let me steal just to prove that I know some of these.
Give up.
It's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, damn it.
Out of
the Shadows.
I was in the sort of Ninja Turtles demographic when I was a kid,
yeah.
And everything was a shell pun. Everything. Yeah. Kicking some shell.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I wanted to jump in the first.
All right, Gene Demby.
Mm-hmm.
We had 20 years to prepare, so did they.
This is Independence Day resurgence.
Yes, yeah. It
Big
is.
Yeah.
Stephen Thompson.
Yeah.
We came from them. They will come for us. Would you like your hint?
Yes.
Noomi Rapace.
What?
You're not going to get it. He's never going to get it. Do you know it?
Alien. Prometheus.
Prometheus. Prometheus. Glenn Weldon.
Yep.
Back to the grind.
Coffee. processed meat. not sausage party. Okay, go.
Hint is Channing Tatum.
Magic Mike XXL.
Yes, it is Magic Mike XXL.
I was going to guess Step Up, one of the Step Up movies. Mm.
That's a good guess, too.
Yeah.
Gene Demby, the most powerful force on Earth is about to be unleashed by the two people who should know better. That's a terrible tagline.
That is
a terrible tagline.
I should say these are all coming from IMDb.
Sure.
I can't guarantee you they're all real taglines. They might be someone's quote from the trailer
The Wikipedia entry.
The Wikipedia entry about the IMDb page. Gene Demby. The most powerful force on Earth is about to be unleashed by the two people who should know better.
I definitely need a clue.
You might get really wrapped up in this sequel.
Wrapped with a W?
Yes.
I thought it was maybe a hip-hop punk. I have no idea. Awesome.
No, you have no idea. Any ideas?
The Mummy 2.
That's The Mummy Returns. Oh, yep, Mummy Returns. The Mummy Returns. Nope. All right. Stephen Thompson. On the streets of Tokyo, speed needs no translation. Tokyo.
Yes. It's a...
That's my only
Tokyo
clue is
the...
right in the tagline.
The streets of Tokyo.
On the streets of Tokyo. Speed.
Yeah, just made her hand go fast.
I was going to say, Speed 2 was on a boat.
All right, do you know it, Glenn?
Fast and the Furious, Tokyo Drift.
Tokyo Drift. Okay. I thought I was giving you a doable one there, Thompson. Glenn Weldon, they'll do anything for their families except grow up.
Okay, so this is some kind of fratty man boy.
Oh, yes, yeah. It is.
Oh, I think I might.
Yeah.
And I'm not up on this particular genre. I might need a hint. Give me a
hint. Sequel designed to let its star take his friends on vacation.
I don't know.
Is it Grown Ups 2?
It is Grown Ups 2. Very good. Very good, Stephen. Very good. Gene Demby, they're not 21 anymore.
Okay, I need a hint.
Hey, also Channing Tatum.
Oh, 22 Jump Street?
22 Jump Street. There you go.
The score, as it stands now.
I have 0.
Gene Denby with 3.
That's right.
Glenn with 1.
That's right.
Stephen Thompson with nothing.
That's right. And me with all the points. All right, Stephen Thompson. In this worldwide conspiracy, the only thing you can count on is the X Factor.
The only thing you can count
in this worldwide conspiracy, the only thing you can count on is the X Factor.
Is it season 2 of the X Factor? is X Factor with an X or an EX?
It's with an X.
With an
good
X.
Question.
Okay.
The X Factor.
Oh, okay. It's going to be an X-Men sequel. Is it X-Men First Class?
Well, no, it's X-Men 2, but I'm going to give it to you because...
What?
Well, I'll give you the one. I'll give you 1 point.
I don't know which.
One point for getting not the correct X-Men sequel. Glenn Weldon, coming May 25th, 1983, to your galaxy.
See, I do need a hint.
Your galaxy, of course, is nearby.
As opposed to one.
Far, far away? I got it. I got it. Give me the tagline again.
Coming May 25th, 1983, to your galaxy.
Return of the Jedi?
Yes.
Okay,
it is. Right. Very, very good, Glenn Weldon. Gene Demby, one last chance for peace. This is a very hard one. You'll never get it.
I'm not going to.
Your clue is every good sequel has monkeys in it.
It has monkeys in it?
Yes.
Is it a Planet of the Apes sequel?
It might be.
Oh, it's a... So there's Return, and then there's Dawn. It's Dawn.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. That is correct. 1 point for
Gene Demby. 1 point.
1 point. Yeah. I'm going to give you 1.
I was like, there was no Congo sequel then. Someone's like, they're not monkeys, they're apes.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, Stephen Thompson. Yeah. At the end of the universe lies the beginning of vengeance.
What? Wow. I got nothing. Give me a clue.
Ricardo Montalban.
Oh,
Fantasy Island 2.
I was gonna say, wasn't he the heavy in a Naked Gun movie? Was he the?
He was.
That wouldn't be Naked Gun 2.5.
No.
Is he the villain in the Superman movie?
From Hell's Heart, I stab at thee.
That was Star Trek 2.
Star Trek 2. Okay, I knew it was
Khan.
One of them. Yeah, I didn't see Wrath of Khan when it was out. Sorry.
Okay. I wouldn't have gotten that either. I might with Ricardo Montalban.
Yeah.
Maybe. Glenn Weldon, in the future, cities will become deserts, roads will become battlefields, and the hope of mankind will appear as a stranger.
It's the Road Warrior.
It is the Road Warrior.
Wow, that's a great... How did you know it was the Road Warrior?
Just because, I don't know.
All right. Now, Gene, if you get this one, you will win. 12 is the new 11.
Ocean's... 12.
Ocean's 12. Gene Demby pulls it out.
Dominates.
Gene Demby pulls it out.
Channel my inner Kyrie Irving.
6-4-1.
Hooray. All right. Well, that whole thing made me extremely happy. And when we come back, it is going to be time for our favorite segment of this week and every week, what is making us happy this week. So come right back.
Support for Pop Culture Happy Hour and the following message come from Whole Foods Market. This week, Whole Foods is having sales. But this week isn't really special because every week, Whole Foods Market has sales. They've put yellow stickers and signs all over the store so you can find the highest quality food at the best price.
including meat and poultry from farmers and ranchers committed to quality and taste, and organic produce grown without toxic pesticides. So keep an eye out for yellow the next time you shop, and visit WholeFoodsMarket.com to see this week's specials.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week?
Recently caught up. You guys talked about it, at least one of you talked about it when it actually came out, but I finally caught up with season 2 of Catastrophe.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful.
Over the weekend. Watched it in its massive, sprawling 3-hour entirety.
Yeah.
And it is amazing how much story they managed to pack into 6 1/2-hour episodes of what is the truest, messiest love story on television. I just was riveted by the whole thing. The way that show is structured is so interesting, in addition to being very, very funny. Typically, in a season of a show like this, you would have an arc in which a conflict is set up early on, which is then resolved over the course of the season. And one of the fascinating things that Catastrophe does in these little 6-episode seasons, and for those who haven't heard of it or seen it, it's Rob Delaney and Sharon Horgan. Mm-hmm. In the beginning of the show, they meet, have a one-night stand, and she gets pregnant. And it's all aftermath of that. With the second season in particular, but really the first season too, the peril is right at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first few episodes of the show are just very raucous and very funny and bawdy and dirty. And then this massive threat gets placed right at the end of the season, which you are then left just sort of thinking about the messiness of it all. I love this show. I like the second season even better than the first. You can watch it on Amazon Prime is kind of where it lives. And it's really easy sometimes, I think, to forget about these shows like a week or two after they come out. Like everybody watches them and talks about them at once and then forgets about them. Catastrophe season 2.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
2 things. The first one is a video game. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a lighthouse keeper, and then my parents informed me with a little bit too much relish, I think, that lighthouse keepers are not a thing anymore. So then I switched. I said, okay, then, you know those fire lookout towers in national parks, those platforms way above the tree line where you can kind of look down and you look out at things? That's kind of what I wanted to be.
And not be among the other humans?
Well, that's the through line. If you're trying to piece together the through line, that's it. They haven't made the lighthouse keeper sim yet, so get on that. But they have made Firewatch, which is a game that came out in February. It's for PS4 and PCs, and it's not truly a lookout for fire sim. It's basically an adventure game. It's 1989. You're in the Shoshone National Forest. You are stationed in a fire tower, and you start fresh, and you can only communicate with the person in the other fire tower that you can see by walkie-talkie, and you start off and you start doing your job. You check for downed power lines. You get some, you know, raucous drunk teens who are shooting off fireworks, you know, to get them to stop. And then gradually, over the course of several days, as you do this job, something starts happening where it kind of creeps in. There's a layer of paranoia and weirdness that's really challenging. It's not horror, but it is sort of thriller. And it's also gorgeous because you have this amazing countryside. And it's the voice acting. You are played by Rich Sommer. That's the voice actor.
Nice.
And if you need, like, he is serving you hapless everyman realness. He's the guy. He's the go-to guy. He does a great job. It's a gorgeous game, and it's very short. It's like 5 hours long. It'll take you one evening. Firewatch. The next thing is a new EP by a guy I've talked about on the show many times before, Brendan McLean. So if Eve Barsley is the patron saint of Thompson's quarter of Pop Culture Happy Hour, then I claim Brendan McLean as mine. This is queer pop, which means it has a lot of history to it, which means you can hear Pet Shop Boys, you can hear Erasure, you can hear the Village People in this mix, and it's 7 songs, including Hugs Not Drugs, which I've talked about before,
right.
A great
yep.
song called Tectonic, a new song called House of Air and Never Enough, and a great song featuring Amanda Palmer called On the Door, which we're going to hear of a little bit of right now.
You're on the door. -1. You're on the door. -2. You're on the door. -3. You're on the door. -4. You can't bring your little friend. You don't see my show again.
So that is the new EP with a lot of a great sense of humor, which is something you don't necessarily get in a lot of queer pop. up. It's really fun. It's Fun Bang One by Brendan McLean.
Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Gene Demby, what is making you happy this week, sir?
Okay, so for the last few weeks, my girlfriend and I have been putting around on our little Mini Cooper listening to this song by Designer. I got broads in Atlanta, just at the lean the family, credit cards in the scammers, hitting the licks in the banner, legacies, family, wait and see, look like a panda, going out like a Montana, honey killers on the helmets, legacies, family, wait and see, family, pockets full. It's called Panda, and it's one of the top songs in the country right now. It is a great song to dumb out to. It's a great song to work out to. It's also completely unintelligible. It's impossible to tell what Designer is saying. And part of the reason why it's hard to figure out what he's saying is that if you didn't know who this guy Designer is, you would think he was just Future, right? Future sort of is the, like, luminary in, like, strip club hip-hop. And he's from Atlanta, and he has this drawly sort of, he doesn't enunciate. And what makes Designer really interesting is that he's from Brooklyn, right? He's this, like, he comes from this place that has always been really parochial about the way rap and hip-hop is supposed to sound. It's supposed to be super verbose, super articulated. And he's doing this thing that sounds really, really evocative of Southern hip-hop, where you don't sort of, you don't hit the consonants as hard, and it's sort of drawly and sing-songy. It speaks to how much the center of gravity in hip-hop has shifted to the South, right? That even kids in Brooklyn are growing up with sort of like trying to sound like dudes from the South. But what's even more fascinating is, like, it's a song about cars and women and money, but it's actually a really weird song. And sometimes I think we forget, because of hip-hop is so ubiquitous, just how off-kilter and how weird the references are and what people are trying to do is. And so the other day, last week, XXL does a freshman class issue every year where they sort of shout out a bunch of new artists. They shouted out Designer, and there's this freestyle, which is not really a freestyle. It's almost like a Negro spiritual, and it's about the same stuff. It's about, like, women and getting back at people. But there's so much going on in it. It's only 45 seconds long, and it's just really remarkable. You know that it's on the finest. Timmy Turner. He be wishing for a burner. To kill everybody walking. You know that it's on the finest. But bitch, you're beating. I find this dude so fascinating. Like, I was listening to him. I was like, it's impossible to listen to Panda without, like, having the Genius lyrics up, because it's impossible to
figure out. I was listening to the thinking, like, we might have to bleep any of this if it swears, but I can't tell.
Right. Same thought.
And there's a Genius video of him explaining his first song, Panda, or the big song, Panda, and he almost has, like, a British lilt when he's talking, and it's like, what is going on here, right? I find him so compelling. I don't even know if he's good, right? But I just find him, like, he got signed to Kanye West's label, Good Music, and before Kanye just decided to just be a full-time troll, he was actually somebody who did this very similar thing, which is, like,
yes,
just made things more interesting by his presence, right? I've been sort of, like, going down all these Designer rabbit holes for the last couple of weeks, so that's what's making me happy.
Yeah, I think you're hitting on a thing that I also often love, which is finding somebody whose work you're not even sure if you like it, but it's so interesting to think about and talk about with people. So I thank you for bringing that.
No, thank
super
you.
Super fascinating. Yeah, thank you. All right, I got two things this week. One of which is, and Glenn and I talked about this a little bit on an NPR Live video that we did last week, which you can find on our Facebook page, and that is the new Match Game, starring Alec Baldwin as the host, which debuted this weekend on ABC. It's pretty good. But they had Titus Burgess and Michael Ian Black and Sutton Foster and, you know, a whole bunch of people. Deborah Messing, and I'm trying to think who I'm missing. Rosie O'Donnell is the Richard Dawson, is like the super player so far. They have kept sort of the look and feel of the 70s.
Steering into the skid.
Donk, 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 donk. If that music means anything to you and you love Match Game, it feels like Match Game in this. It's very cheesy, and you can feel everybody sort of leaning into the, as Glenn said, the kind of booziness and
the pinky ring of it all.
The pinky ring of it all. So that's a joy. The other is, as we release this episode, it is Friday, July 1st, and tonight PBS is bringing back the Great British Baking Show, or whatever it is they call it on PBS. I think it is Great British Baking Show. Bake Off, they call it in the UK. If you are a person who seeks out television via other channels, you may have already seen this season. It's the most recent UK season, but it has not aired in the US yet. This show is such a joy to watch. I think we are going to talk about it coming up on the show here in the next couple weeks. But if you like the competitive nature of reality shows, but you don't like the fact that they cast people for personality disorders, this is the show for you. I think I have literally never seen a contestant on this show who I looked at and thought, that would be an unpleasant person to know in real life. They take an entirely different approach to what mentors and judges are supposed to do. Their mentors and judges are gentle but very straightforward. And most importantly to me, recognize that there's such a thing as you got this very right and this very wrong in the same project, which prevents the kind of everything is either you're a superstar or you're terrible, which is kind of where Idol, for example, tends to go. So Great British Bake Off / Great British Baking Show, PBS, starting Friday night, July 1st, they're bringing back this season. I have seen some of it through screeners, but frustratingly, not all of it. But that is what I was binging on this weekend, and it made me very, very happy and continues to make me very happy. So that is my contribution. And, of course, the opportunity to be here with all my pals and save them from seeing Independence Day.
Seriously, thanks, buddy.
Thanks for jumping on that grenade for us.
That's right. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPRMonkeyC. You can follow Stephen at IDislikeStephen and Glenn at GH Weldon and Gene at GD215. That's GEEDE215. You can follow our producer Jessica Reedy at Jessica_Reedy and our producer emeritus and music director Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band Hello Come In provides our in and out music, which you are bobbing your head to right now. So thanks to you guys for being here.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you right back here next week.
NPR's Invisibilia is back with a new season of stories about the invisible forces that shape human behavior. This week, hosts Elise Spiegel and Lulu Miller journey to an Ohio prison to explore whether our personalities are as stable as we think. You can listen and subscribe to Invisibilia at npr.org/podcasts and on the NPR One app.